Hello, and welcome to the Thursday, August 3rd edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Jeff Brown is at the board. We've got a great show. We're going to talk with UAS representatives Amanda Triplett and India Busby. Then we'll find out what's going on at the Treadwell Ice Arena. So get some information about staying germ-free from a specialist from Bartlett Regional Hospital. And end with Nancy DeCharney with What's Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. Police on Maui, Hawaii, arrested a half dozen protesters Tuesday during a blockade to stop trucks hauling equipment for a telescope under construction. Among other things, the trucks were carrying the 4-meter diameter mirror for the Daniel K. Inouye Solar Telescope under construction on top of Haleakala, the tallest summit on Maui. The mountain is considered sacred by Native Hawaiians. The Honolulu Star Advertiser reports those arrested face charges of disorderly conduct, obstructing a highway, and failing to obey a police officer. After officers cleared the road, the convoy of trucks passed through and made it to their destination. Construction on the telescope started in 2012 and is scheduled to be complete in 2019. Once finished, it will be the largest telescope in the world. An external review has been released into allegations by several indigenous women who claim they were coerced into being sterilized after giving birth. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the review found that the women clearly felt stressed and under undue duress.
The 56-page review was compiled over 6 months. It included interviews with 7 indigenous women, healthcare providers from the Saskatoon Health Region, where the sterilizations are alleged to have taken place, and members of the Ministry of Child and Family Services. It found that the women felt stressed from being coerced into having a tubal ligation while in labor. That's a procedure in which a woman's fallopian tubes are clamped or severed, considered a permanent method of birth control. The report says most of the women did not understand that the procedure was permanent. It concluded local health authorities did not serve the women's needs and impacted their womanhood, their mental health, self-esteem, and their relationships. Bobby Cameron is a chief representing 74 First Nations in Saskatchewan. He says he didn't need to read the report to know what it was going to say.
They're going to say what we've known all along, that the doctors and the nurses bullied and they forced our First Nations woman to get that procedure done against their will.
At a news conference, the vice president of the Regional Health Authority apologized to the women. At one point, she was in tears as she said she's sorry for what the women experienced under the health authority's care and that they were not treated with respect, compassion, and support. And she acknowledged that racism exists within the healthcare system. Health authorities say they will take guidance from Indigenous elders and will discuss further action with government agencies in the coming weeks. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
An employee of the Washington, D.C. office of the Navajo Nation is charged for bringing a loaded handgun onto the grounds of the U.S. Capitol. The Washington Post reports Capitol Police arrested Kimberly Barber after they found the firearm in a suitcase she brought through a security entrance of the Cannon House office building. Barber told police she had no knowledge the gun was there. Paper reports the gun belonged to a Navajo Nation police officer who left it in a hotel room. Barber's boss asked her to bring the suitcase, not knowing the gun was in there. A utility company plans to challenge the Navajo Nation's appeals court win that Nation officials view as a victory for tribal sovereignty. The case involves the Public Service Company of New Mexico's effort to run power lines across the Navajo Nation. Tribal officials fought the plan and won a Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals decision. PNM filed a motion to stay that decision last week while it pursues an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp is urging the Attorney General to approve federal reimbursements for law enforcement costs during the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. In a letter to Jeff Sessions this week, the Democrat says state and local law enforcement officials performed, quote, admirably under immense pressure and scrutiny. She blames the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for the extended length of the protests, saying the agency failed to make a timely decision on the permit for the pipeline company to move ahead. She also says the Army Corps neglected to limit the size of the protest camp on their land. She tells the Attorney General the law enforcement agencies deserve to recover at least part of the estimated $40 million in additional costs they incurred during the months of protests. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University, we know what it means to be rooted in community. You can get your Master's of Social Work and amplify your voice without having to leave it. The part-time online program accepts applications between August 1st and 31st. More at humboldt.edu/socialwork. Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. And it is August 3rd, and it's also sunny. High near 64, they say. Partly cloudy tonight with a low around 52. Tomorrow, it's mostly sunny with a high near 68. And then Saturday, we're looking at 75. And Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 64. Yahoozie, summer is here in August in Juneau, Alaska. We will take it. Okay, our first guests are usually we have the UAS Corner, the University of Alaska Southeast representatives. And in the studio with Jeff and I, we have Amanda Triplett, who is the Associate Director of Recruitment and Advising, and India Busby, who is a current UAS student. She's a TMHS grad, Thunder Mountain High School, if people are not familiar with that acronym. And she's also a student recruiter and a peer advisor. So welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Okay, so what's going on? It's back to school time. What's going on at the campus?
It is back to school time. So the big deadline that we have coming up is the August 15th deadline, which is the deadline to apply for admissions.
What does that mean, apply for admissions?
Great question. So apply for admissions is applying for a degree program. So you're interested in pursuing the Bachelor of Science in Biology program or elementary education. So August 15th is the last day to actually apply to one of those degree programs, not to be confused with the last day to register for classes, two totally separate things.
Okay. So, but if you register for classes, let's say you miss the admissions deadline, I'm just saying, I'm being devil's advocate here, and you take some classes, then you could tuck them into that degree program.
Correct.
Later on.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, there's always different avenues as well. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So August 15th is the deadline for admissions for a degree program.
Mm-hmm.
And then when do classes start?
Yeah. So classes start on August 28th. So that also is coming up fast. So it's not too late to meet with an advisor, to take placement tests for math and English, to apply for student housing, or fill out paperwork for financial aid if you're interested or need some federal assistance to help pay for school.
Right. And then there's the full-time students, well, all different types of students, but let's say the degree-oriented students,
mm-hmm.
your four-year program, but you also have some master programs, too.
Yeah, so we have some really great graduate programs. Those deadlines vary, so the August 15th deadline is for undergraduate programs. The graduate programs oftentimes have their own specific deadline for admissions.
So, India, what year are you going into?
So I'm going to be going into my junior year.
All right.
Yeah, so my third.
How many classes?
I've signed up for 6 classes.
Really?
This semester, yeah. So I'm taking 17 credits.
All right.
Yeah.
And then the reason behind that?
It's
a very full load.
Want to graduate on time, I guess.
Yes,
yeah.
And which one of the classes are you most interested in?
I'm actually taking a sociology of terrorism class, so I'm very excited for that class. And I'm also taking a violence and crime class as well. So I guess they're both sociology courses, which is what my major is. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited for those.
Sounds really interesting. And then, Amanda, you were saying that there's some really great classes just for, like, people, all different types of people.
Yeah, so a lot of our classes are really great fits for dual enrollment students. So if you're in high school but you want to get an edge up on an extra math class or a language or just something else that you're interested in, a lot of great classes for dual enrollment students, just community members, or students who haven't signed up yet for UAS. But Alaska Native Studies 101, Intro to Alaska Native Studies, is a great new course that we're offering this semester, so we're really excited for that class to come out. Anthropology 348, Anthropology of Death and Burial with Erica Hill. That's a really popular course for a lot of our students. And the cool thing about anthropology classes is they don't have prerequisites. So you don't have to have the intro to anthropology to come out and take Anthropology of Death and Burial. If you're like, ooh, that just sounds really cool, come on out, meet with an advisor, we'll get you all set up and registered.
Yeah.
You know, also some really great construction tech classes if you want to just learn how to improve building techniques, or some, you know, automotive diesel courses if you have a boat, a diesel engine that you need to kind of figure out how to tinker with a little bit more. Some great introductory levels down at our tech center across from JDHS.
That's great. And then, of course, you have your very, very strong writing program. You have Nature Writing with Kevin Meyer, Intro to Creative Writing with Emily Wall.
Yeah, and I mean, those are both just a handful of some of our amazing professors and faculty that we have on the UAS campus, which I think India can speak to. They're just so passionate about what they teach and connect so well with our students. That's, I think, what makes the difference. That's what made the difference for me as a UAS student, knowing my professors and having them share all of their knowledge with us.
What do you think about that, Andy, India?
I definitely agree. In all my classes, all of my professors have shown how passionate they are about making sure that the students are obtaining the information that they're giving. And so I think they really do take the time to get to know the students and figure out what works with them. And I mean, that's the whole reason why I came to UAS, or decided to stay here at least, is because of how small the classes are and how passionate the professors are. So, yeah, I'm really happy with how they all do everything. So, yeah, it's pretty great.
Cool. All right. So if people want to check out the catalog, see what is being offered this semester, where can they go?
So they can go to uas.alaska.edu and check out our website. They can also stop by our campus and make an appointment with an academic advisor like myself, or they can call 907-796-6100 to make an appointment and get some information.
Okay, one last question before I let you both go. So, India, you're going into your junior year. You're taking 17 credits. You're really passionate about sociology.
Yeah.
What else are you looking forward to starting up the school?
I'm really looking forward to Intro to Creative Writing with Emily Wall. So I've only heard amazing things about her, and I'm really excited to finally be able to take a class with her. And so I'm really looking forward to see what the whole shebang is. So, yeah,
the Emily Wall mystique. Well, I could speak to that. I've taken a couple of courses with Emily Wall because I'm a closet writer who just outed myself on local radio. But I've taken some classes with Dr. Wall and Ernestine Hayes, and I think a few online as well. So it's all true.
Yeah,
she's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
A great poet, a wonderful teacher.
Yeah.
So that's good. What about you? What are you looking forward to for the next semester?
Yeah, you know, this is the busy time for advising students, coming in, getting registered, having lots of questions, and I really love being a dot connector to help put students in touch with the right resources to help them be successful. And I'm really, really excited for new student orientation, when all the new students, new incoming first-time freshmen and transfer students, they're on campus and they're all excited and they were all in the same position, just not knowing really where to go. And I love being there for that energy and the start of the semester. So I'm excited to see campus full.
It's back to school at UAS. It's a pretty exciting time. And, you know, we need our fall sweaters year-round.
So I know, except for today.
Except you don't even need a new wardrobe. All right. Well, thanks for coming in today. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 3rd of August, 2017. It's the birthday of the poet Marvin Bell, born in Santa Mauritius, a little farming community on the south shore of Long Island, 1937. Went in the army, came back home, published his first book of poems, Things We Dreamt We Died For, and then another 10 years later, Stars Which See, Stars Which Do Not See. Went on to teach at the Iowa Writers' Workshop for 40 years. Marvin Bell, who said, "Much of our lives involves the word no. In school, we're mostly told, don't do it this way, do it that way. But art is the big yes. In art, you get a chance to make something where there was nothing." It's the birthday of the poet Hayden Carruth, born in Waterbury, Connecticut, 1921, served in the Army Air Force during World War II, went to graduate school on the G.I. Bill, fell in love with jazz, and moved to Chicago. But in 1953, suffered a nervous breakdown, spent the next year and a half in treatment for alcoholism, went through electroshock therapy, and left to move to rural Vermont and New York State. He began to farm. He worked as a mechanic, hired himself out as a field hand, kept up a hardscrabble lifestyle for decades, and wrote poems about people who live by their hands. In 1996, at the age of 75, his collection Scrambled Eggs and Whiskey won the National Book Award. Hayden Carruth died in 2008 after complications from a stroke. It's the birthday of the journalist and war correspondent Ernie Pyle, Ernest Taylor Pyle, born near Dana, Indiana, 1900, went to Indiana University, went to work on the Washington Daily News, where he was unhappy sitting behind a desk, so he and his wife packed up their Ford Roadster and took off on a 9,000-mile trip around the United States. When World War II broke out, he became a war correspondent, writing stories from the front, from the soldier's perspective, won the Pulitzer Prize. Ernie Pyle said, "Someday when peace has returned to this world, I want to come to London again and stand on a certain balcony on a moonlit night and look down upon the peaceful silver curve of the Thames with its dark bridges." But he was killed by machine gun fire on an island near Okinawa, April 18, 1945. It was on this day, 1841, Juliana Horatia Ewing was born in the village of Ecclesfield in Yorkshire, England. She loved to make up stories for her siblings, based on Hans Christian Andersen and the Grimm brothers. She wrote plays for her siblings. When she was 18, she founded a lending library and then began her publishing career, writing stories for magazines. Her book, The Brownies and Other Tales, was very popular, practically unknown today, but immensely popular in her time. And the founders of the Girl Scout movement named their junior-level scouts Brownies in honor of her. Here's a poem for today by Laura McKee, Exotic Treats. Especially on long drives through the country, you like to tell that story about your old girlfriend whose parent was killed one afternoon by a raccoon who stole in through the pet door. It was horrible, you say, feathers everywhere. Are you laughing? Stop laughing. She really loved that bird. Exotic Treats, a poem by Laura McKee from See You Soon, published by the University of Arkansas Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios located in downtown Juno. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. It's 19 minutes past the hour. And hey, next Monday, Dr. Elaine Schroeder and Cara Nelson, director of Haven House, are going to chat on Elaine's show, Mind Over Matter, at 7 p.m. on KTOO. And they're going to have an in-depth conversation. So you should definitely check in about Mind Over Matter, Dr. Elaine Schroeder and Cara Nelson as they talk about Haven House in Juneau and the hopes to meet the needs of women after incarceration, building up their lives. Sounds great. So our next guest, our first guest was UAS, and it's back to school at UAS and also at the local schools in about two weeks from yesterday. And then in the studio with Jeff and I, we have Lauren Anderson. She's the Treadwell Arena Manager, and fall also means ice time in Juneau. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joan.
So what's going on? So you've had no ice all summer, right?
We did not. We take the ice out in April, and this summer we offered roller skating, and it was fantastic. We worked with the roller derby as well as local community organizations that sponsored a couple of about seven Friday open skates that was Zentropa Services and Love and Matter Shop, the new shop downtown, and they sponsored open skates, which was great. We were able to make it free for the community, and we had a really great turnout. So that was really fun. And then the derby was able to do a junior derby camp, and then the adults were able to do a little mashup. So that was a really great way to have our summer. We also offered a little bit of floorball with some private rentals, and we're looking forward to offering more of that next summer.
That's okay.
But we're excited to be having ice starting on Monday.
All right. So when you say, I'm going to digress off message for a minute, and then we'll get into all the new skates that are happening and the free skates and how to rent the arena, because we know it's a very popular place. So ice going in and out, how does that even happen?
Well, first of all, we need to cool the we have a cement slab, and so we have to cool that down, and that takes about 2 days to get it to 16 degrees. And once it's cold enough, where we take out this, it's this large hopper that you pull, and it's full of water, and we spray down water, and we do about six layers, and that's called the bond layer, and it's just water. And then the next day, we come in and we put the white paint down, and it's kind of a powder that you mix with water, and you spray that in and do a couple of layers of that, and then we paint, and then we start building on top of it with a hand sprayer that's connected to a hose, and we just lay water until it's just about an inch thick. And once it's an inch or just under, we can start driving the Zamboni on it. But we're not able to put the machine out on there because of the studded tires, and the ice has to be thick enough so we don't pull up all that work we did painting and the in-ice logos. So if you're interested, you can like us on Facebook at Treadwell Arena, and we put some videos of the day-by-day activities going on. We did a time-lapse and even a short video of the first layer of water that we put down. So we hadn't done that before, so it's fun to share the process with the community and whoever would like to see it.
Yeah,
and every rink does it a little bit different.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, I know the Treadwell has a lot of users. I'm sure the hockey families that are listening and the skating families that are listening are really excited that you'll be back in business, and you're celebrating the return of the ice, as they say. When and how?
We are. Well, we are kicking off the season on Monday, August 7th, with a hockey camp. And you have to sign up in advance, and you do have to have some skating skills to be in the camp. It's called Planet Hockey. This is their second year coming to Juneau. And they have a youth clinic, and it's all day, as well as an adult clinic. And adults out there, they need more participants. So sign up today. You can go to our website, go to Planet Hockey website. And the adult portion is on Tuesday and Thursday, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. So it's a great opportunity to get back out on the ice, get your skating legs back under you. And then we'll have open skates and public sessions. We actually have our free open skate on Monday, 3:30 to 4:30, and it's sponsored by Second Wind Sports. So we're really excited to be offering our free first open skate this season.
That sounds great. And then there's going to be another open skate later in the month, right?
Yeah, August we have a variety of free skating opportunities. Not only our first open skate on Monday, but back to school skate is the Friday after school starts, so that's the 18th, and that's free thanks to our sponsor, Douglas 4th of July Committee, and that's from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And then on the 19th, which is a Saturday, we have our annual Day of Play. This is a Parks and Recreation sponsored
citywide
event where you can go to the different facilities during specific times and take advantage and explore and maybe try something you may not have done before. Or if you're a regular user, say at Treadwell, come and skate, and it's free. Skates are included.
Okay. So, yeah. And all these activities and opportunities to sign up for Ice Time are on the webpage or the Facebook page?
Yeah, for special signups or just for Day of Play?
Or just kind of like how people could find out what's going
on. Oh, yeah, please go to our website, treadwellarena.org, or like us on Facebook. We have a really great schedule that you can access from our website that gives you all the open skates. If you're interested in renting private ice time, maybe you want to have a birthday party or a group of you want to play hockey or figure skate, you can look on that schedule and see what's available and then contact us. There's also a rental agreement form that's required, and that's all online, and you can fill that out and send that to us. We have some really great opportunities if there are any businesses out there in the local community and want to do any sponsorship at the rink. We have dasher boards, which are around the inside of the boards, and we have boards for 1 year that are $450, and it's just a great opportunity for businesses to kind of share their support for the arena and the community and get their name out there.
Sounds great. Yeah,
it is.
Great way to partner and support the rink and also get their name out there. It's a great community partnership.
Yeah, and then this year we have our third grade season pass. We're in our second season offering that, and we're looking for a sponsor, and that's $2,000. Maybe you could share if there's a couple of businesses interested in sponsoring that, as well as our inclusive after-school skating program, and that's geared for youth with special needs, and that's $1,500. So we're hoping to get more people out there. You can sponsor an open skate. There's all sorts of great ways to help support the rink community.
That sounds great. If you're just joining us, we're chatting with Lauren Anderson, who's the Treadwell Arena Manager. And, yeah, they are back in the ice business on Monday. So check it out on their website. Search for them. Or their social media sites.
Yes, please do.
All right, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. For most songbirds, like this song sparrow, learning their own species song is a straightforward proposition. As young male birds get ready to leave the nest for good, they hear their male parents singing again and again. They learn to copy him. They imprint on their father's song. But what about a brown-headed cowbird, raised by foster parents of a different species altogether? How does the young bird learn to sing the correct song? Scientists think that when a young cowbird hears the chatter call of an adult cowbird, something is triggered in its brain, and it begins to learn the song of its own species. Like a kind of password, the chatter call guides the young bird in recognizing what species to identify with. Then, when the young cowbird is ready, probably when it's 2 years old, and hears an adult male brown-headed cowbird sing, it will imprint on that song. It's a remarkable adaptation. Even more so when you consider that cowbirds are fostered by as many as 220 different species, and they still wind up learning their own song. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
It is 28 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. And, yes, it is sunny out. It is going to be near 64 today. Tomorrow, 68 is the high. Saturday is 75. And Sunday is 64. No rain. A couple of clouds starting next week. So it's pretty good. They say it's right now 64 degrees, so we've already hit the high of the day. Sounds good. All right, so our next guest is from Bartlett Regional Hospital. She is the infection preventionist, so she is an infection prevention expert. And her name is Charlie Griven. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so you've been working in various capacity at the hospital for a while.
Yeah, I have celebrated 11 years there. Started out as a new nurse in 2006, but yeah, I've loved working there. And now a new challenge for me is this new role as infection preventionist.
And what does that mean?
Well, I am part of a great group of people that support our patient care experts, the nurses and the doctors at the bedside, in providing the best safe patient care. My main goal and job is to look out for healthcare acquired infections. You know, so I look at all the patients that come through the door and first off start with, you know, any blood cultures or urine cultures or wound cultures that they might have. So that's my start off my morning like that, and then I just kind of see where the day takes me with questions from nursing staff and doctors or, hey, what's going on with this? I also have a lot of programs in place, like the flu vaccine program that's starting up in just another month at Bartlett. I have to get everybody at Bartlett vaccinated for the flu. So a lot of different parts of patient care and employee health.
Okay. So if you're kind of like the subject matter expert at Bartlett to prevent infection,
mm-hmm.
what do you want to say to the general public about the best practices to stay healthy?
Well, it's common sense and really going back to the basics. Wash your hands, like what your mother told you to wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Keep things generally clean, because preventing transmitting of infections starts with washing them off your hands, because you're always touching everything, you know, and you don't know how many times you touch your face and you touch your surface. But if you're around somebody sick, they could have a microorganism on the surface next to them because of, you know, poop or viruses or vomit that's cleaned off, but there still might be a small, tiny microorganism on that surface. You touch it, and then you put your fingers in your mouth, you could get sick.
Okay. That paints a picture.
Oh, yes,
right.
I know.
So you should definitely wash your hands. And then in Juneau, which is a pretty healthy environment from where I sit, I could definitely be wrong, what are the, like, things that you should be looking for? Like, you know, so let's say there is an influx of tourists coming off a cruise ship. Does that raise the risk?
Yes. I'm a relatively new infection preventionist. Like I said, I just took this job in January. I'm learning from a lot of different nurses and infection preventionists around the state of what to keep track of with our tourist seasons coming in. And it's, you know, thinking about a lot of people in tight spaces and what they can spread easily through them. So obviously, you know, GI illness. We're not going to get a diagnosis of if you have norovirus until we get a culture, and that'll take days to figure out. But we really focus on symptoms. So do you feel sick? Are you throwing up? Do you have diarrhea? If you have got the flu, are you feeling like you got a sore throat, coughing, have a mild fever? You could be sick with that virus, and it's easy to spread. So we pay attention to trends. State epidemiology notifies me if there's a certain number of people on a cruise ship that are experiencing the same kind of symptoms, because that's your first clue as to something going on.
So I think norovirus is a word that's bandied about on the news and certainly in Juneau, and it's associated with I don't want to say it's associated with the cruise ships, but we've heard of people getting sick with norovirus while on cruises.
Oh, yeah. The cruise ship is so easy, you know, because you're next to all kinds of different people and you're eating in the same spot and there's buffets. So there's a lot that goes into food safety and preventing infections. You know, there's all kinds of hand washing stations before you touch anything and just reminding the general public. I think the message is getting out there really well because everybody knows hand washing is the number one way to prevent infections and keep yourself healthy.
But what is the norovirus? So we've heard the term. Mm-hmm. What is it?
Viruses are super tiny microorganisms that replicate on your in your body. They can live in certain areas. They like certain different kinds of viruses, like different environments, you know, warm and wet or warm and dry. But
okay, so it's just a virus. It just takes hold. And
yeah, you know,
and then it kind of works its way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for coming by today. All right. And if you ever want to come back and tell us what we could do to stay healthy, that would be great.
Yeah, I'd love to come back.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And yes, it is glorious and sunny in downtown Juno. In the studio with Jeff and I, Wayne Stevens of the United Way of Southeast is here to tell us what's going on with our local, very important nonprofit United Way of Southeast.
Well, thank you, Joan. Thank you, Jeff. Always great to be here on Juno Afternoon. It is another lovely day here in downtown Juno. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank KTOO for all your support of United Way and our partner agency over the years, and just talk a little bit about what we've got going on. A couple of really exciting things coming down the pike. We've just been awarded a grant from Serve Alaska to take on management of the AmeriCorps program here in Juneau. And so we've hired a new program manager, and we were fortunate to have Romy McAdams join us as the AmeriCorps program manager. She started about a week ago and is immersing herself in the who, what, when, where, why, how of a government grant. And when I was in the lobby here thumbing through Jeff's poster book, I thought, he's missing the one. We're here from the government. We're here to help.
Wait, before you go any further, I want to ask. So I think we're all familiar with the term AmeriCorps, but what does it really mean, like, to Southeast, to Juneau?
Well, to Juneau, typically there are 10 or 12 host sites. In most instances, a young individual who's graduated from college and working for an education credit of $5,800, $5,900, they volunteer for roughly an 11-month period of time, stint service, doing 1,700 hours of volunteer service. They are not paid. They're not an employee, but they're a volunteer, and they work for the Corporation for National Community Service. And that program in Alaska is run through Serve Alaska at the Department of Commerce, Community, Regional Affairs, and we've been awarded the grant to manage the program this year. And AmeriCorps volunteers have been in the community for many, many years, and I, United Way has had an AmeriCorps volunteer working with us since somewhere around 2004. So it seemed like a natural progression for us to step up to the plate the last couple of years. The program, or last year or so, the program's been managed out of Sitka by the Sitka School District, and they were going through some leadership transitions, and their new director was not going to manage the Juno program from Sitka, so I guess by default we're it.
Okay, and so do they have to, do the volunteers have to work at nonprofit sites?
Predominantly nonprofit sites. The CERV, Corporation for National Community Service, you cannot use the volunteer to replace a paid employee, and typically it's nonprofits, AEYC, the school district, different organizations like that. SAGA ran the program for many years before they closed down, and so we're following in the footsteps of many who have done a great job, and we hope we can make it work for the community.
Oh, I'm sure you will. What else is on the horizon?
Well, it's a campaign season coming right up. We'll be kicking off our annual fall giving campaign and asking employers to encourage their employees to be as philanthropic and generous as most businesses are in the community. Our area of territory runs from Yakutat to Metlakatla, and the last couple of years we've been working really hard to build those relationships in those communities. We have partner agencies that provide services in those communities across Southeast, REACH, SAIL, Catholic Community Service, and in communities, Big Brother, Big Sisters, Boys and Girls Club, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. So there's lots of organizations that are based here in Juneau that provide services across the region. But in, you know, for instance, Sitka, the Sitkins Against Family Violence. So we have done a Day of Caring here in Juneau for many, many years. And 2 years ago, we did a Day of Caring activity in Sitka. And then this year, we did a Day of Caring in Sitka and Ketchikan. And basically, Day of Caring is an event that we match up organizations who have a need for a project that they might not necessarily have the skill set or labor resource to get it done. And so we match organizations with companies and volunteers from companies. So, for instance, Wells Fargo typically pairs up with the Aware Shelter here in Juneau, and they do a deep cleaning in Sitka and in Ketchikan. Wells Fargo, First National Bank, North Rim Bank, GCI employees came together and formed teams to do projects at the Sitkins Against Family Violence, the Wish Shelter in Ketchikan, and just you know, things like that. And so the campaign is an opportunity for individuals to make a pledge and to each payday make a small contribution to one of our partner agencies or to United Way or to one of our areas of focus of health, education, or income stability. So it's a pretty easy way to engage in philanthropy. And you know, a lot of times you come to a community and you're not sure who the players are or how the programs work or where's the best place to put your resources. So the United Way campaign is a real easy way to make a pledge. And once you do it, it's one and done. Each pay period, take a small amount out, and over time that accumulates. And you know, there's, 37,000 employed individuals in Southeast Alaska. And if we could convince each of them to donate $5 a week, it's only $260 a year. But over 36,000 people times 52 weeks, it's close to $10 million that we could raise for
programs throughout Southeast.
You know, reading programs, our reading tutor program. We're getting ready to spool up again for school year. We're looking for volunteers to come into the schools, 2 30-minute sessions, you know, a week at a minimum. Work with students that struggle with their reading skills and just to build their confidence and build their skill sets. If you don't read, can't come work on the radio because you've got to read what the dials say, and if you can't read, you can't do your banking and sign your rent contracts. And so reading is one of those life skills that once you acquire it, nobody can take it away from you. And so we really work with the schools. We're in 3 elementary schools the last couple of years, Harborview, Gastineau in an elementary in Douglas and Riverbend, and work with students, work with the teachers. Teachers identify the kids that need some help. We get volunteers to come in a couple times a week and just work with the kids on their reading skills and help build their confidence.
If you're just joining us, we're chatting with Wayne Stevens of the United Way of Southeast. He's talking about all the great work that the organization does. If people want to find out more, where can they find you on the web and a phone number?
Certainly. Our phone is 463-5530, and on the web, United Way, S-E-A-K, like southeastalaska.org, United Way, S-E-A-K.org. We're on Facebook. You can find United Way of Southeast Alaska on Facebook. You can like us there. Lots of ways. We have a monthly newsletter, and you can sign up and receive that in your inbox anytime. Kind of keep abreast of what's going on. We try to help keep our partner agencies' information flowing to the community so that the broader audience can be reached by our partner agencies.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, Wayne, thank you for all that you do for our region, as well as all the people that you partner and the staff you have over there.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Nancy DeCharney and Arts Up, tomorrow's First Friday.
In 1989, the Exxon Valdez spilled 11 million gallons of crude oil into Prince William Sound. What you might not know, people saw this coming. Before the pipeline was even built, fishermen like Ross Mullins fought to keep oil tankers out of the Sound.
We got to do something. He says this could be a disaster for Prince William Sound.
On the next Midnight Oil, when the one thing fishermen worried would happen, happened.
This is Lieutenant Chris Sell from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups have adopted specific weeks during which they are doing something special to help spread kindness. This week's group is the Juno Order of Eastern Star. You can send stories and pictures of your own kindness experiences to 17YOK at junopolice.com. Be sure to follow the Juno Police Department's Facebook page. Together, we can make Juno a better place to live.
Okay, it is 13 minutes to the hour. It is also Thursday, August 3rd in Juneau, Alaska and beyond. This is a live show coming live from Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of Juneau Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. We usually, if not always, end our show with an Arts Up section with representative of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. Today we have Nancy DeCharney, the executive director, and I don't know. I think tomorrow's going to be like the first sunny First Friday.
Yes, it is.
Is it the first one?
It's really like really going to be the first one that we have. We're going to do the Rock Around the Block party outdoors.
Okay, and all so right. Who is doing the Rock Around the Block tomorrow?
Well, the music is the Juno Marimbas.
Oh.
Which is going to be exciting.
Always joyful.
Always joyful, yes. And it is our first Friday Rock Around the Block. So Wayne Owen and Vivian Prescott are our artists in the gallery. It's a really interesting show. Wayne makes these silhouettes of birds. He's very interested in birds, and they're intricately painted. They're amazing. And Vivian likes to troll through the beaches around Wrangell and such, where their old garbage dumps used to be, and pick up bits of pottery and odd things, shells and such. And she's created these sculptures out of them. And in addition, she has a hands-on thing where you get to sort of dig through some. It's interactive. Let me just say that. There's an interactive component. So you'll have to come by the Arts Council and get your little drawing or the little map of everything. which would be good because I forgot to bring it over here with me. So we're going to just have to make up a few things.
Well, you know, people could go online, and they also
could go
to the Capital City Weekly.
Yeah, and it's
and
in
there happens to be, like, an interview with a certain Nancy Dutra.
And anyway, but it is good. Let's see if there's anything we need to worry about for tonight. There's a downtown family night at the Juneau Public Library from 5:30 to 6:30. So don't miss that. It's light supper, crafts, and a program each month. This is the downtown one, so it's fun for the whole family. Go do that. And there is a glass making part two out at the Makerspace from 6 to 8. So
Do you have to do part one to do part two?
I don't know about that, but it's probably a good idea. But on the other hand, you could go there and express interest, and I'm sure that
see what happens.
Yeah. Absolutely. So tomorrow there's War Baby book signing with Bill Spear. He's come out with this book about Jeeps, which is a story of the original Jeep. It's very interesting, and he will be signing that in the Bill Spear Studio, which is 174 South Franklin Street, Suite 201. It's a little hike up some stairs, but you can make it. And anyway, you should stop in. That's from 4 to 7 at William Spear. And, of course, there are various exhibits all over town. COPA, we'll start over in that neck of the woods, has an exhibit, and I am unable to remember the name of the artist, but she used to live here and is back in town and does acrylics of animals.
Debbie Boone.
So the Bloom. So there you are. Thank you, Jeff. The APK folks will be open, and Ernestine Hayes will be doing a talk, I think it's at 7, about her books and heroes and things like that. She's the author of Tao of Raven and Blonde Indian. I don't think you guys have an opening. I see things on your walls, but I don't think it's being
right.
An opening thing.
And then the block party is from when to when?
It's from 5 to 7.
And is there going to be a food truck?
It's from
4:30?
Yep, there'll be food trucks outside. There'll be art. There'll be dancing. There will be a beer garden. It's marimbas. There'll be face painting, no doubt. And there'll be sunshine. Wow.
Yay!
What's that like?
And then you head down to the downtown corridor, and
yes,
there's
plenty
to do.
There's plenty. Annie Kales has got things going on. The distillery has Marms and Meeks. Marms and Meeks is Megan Chambers, who works for me, and her friend Taylor have stuff going on. The Barnaby Brewery also has an exhibit, and they are pouring Deja Brew. So in case you... The punsters in the room are having a good time with that one. Let's see. It seems that there's Lorelei Miko.
Mm-hmm.
Miko has something on Seward Street across the street from the Canvas. The Canvas has an opening, I'm pretty sure. So, like I said, I'm just making this up from my head, but I remember that there's quite a bit going on downtown. So come on down and just walk up one street and down the other, and something exciting will happen for you. But I know the Senate building is full of lively things happening. Toby Harbinek is at the Juno Artist Gallery. Bustin' Out Boutique is doing a bra drawing or something. I think that the Tea House is doing something. So there's just it's going to be a lovely night, and there's so many things to do on the waterfront now. And you just grab your friends and go for a walk and see what happens. It's going to be exciting. So then when you get done from 5 to 7, at 7 o'clock, you can go over to the Wharf, and they have live music over there as well, so, and cornhole and stuff. It's Camp Damp, the 25th annual Camp Damp Dance and Music Party out at Eagle River Methodist Camp. I think it's the whole weekend. You can get information on tickets and weekend costs and all that sort of stuff at junocontras.org, or you can go onto our website and get all the phone numbers and stuff like that. But it looks like it's going to be a beautiful weekend for being out dancing. The conversation with Ernestine Hayes is called What Shall We Do With Our Heroes, and that's from 7 until 8. 7 to 9, Friday Night Fish Live is the Fish and Chips Company, so do that. Plenty of things. So on Saturday in the morning, there's printmaking with Jim Human. Now, I've heard a rumor This is a Canvas event, but it's sold out. Mm. But it's worth giving them a call at 586-1750. That goes from 10 to 4. There is from 10 to noon the big latch-on out at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. It's celebrating World Breastfeeding Day. There'll be light snacks and door prizes. So you can raise awareness about that. Helping Hands annual dinner and auction from 5 to 9 out at the Valley Church. All proceeds go to Helping Hands, which is a food pantry. So all you can eat, holiday, buffet, silent auction, all sorts of stuff. Cornhole Saturdays at the Alaska Fish Company from 6 to 10. And at the Jack from 7 to 10, it is Let's Dance at the Jack with Gamble and the High Cost of Living. It's a benefit for Reach, so come out for that. There'll be an Alaska Brewing Beer Garden, light hors d'oeuvres, live auction, and, of course, excellent music. So come on down for that. Let's see what else we got going on. Tuesday, well, it's the historic walking tours and the Wickersham tours, of course, are going on. There is support families dealing with addiction and heroin at NCAAD. You can get information about that on Wednesday, 5:30 to 7 p.m. And Ultimate Frisbee on Wednesday from 8 to 10 at the JD High School Turf. So there's a few things going on. I have a little ad. We are starting to run little ads in our Arts Up thing, which, by the way, you can have emailed to you if you want this printed piece sent to your email. You can send me a message and say, please email me that thing. But the Bach, Beethoven, and Bailey tickets are going on sale. That's an event Jazz and Classics is having on September 3rd with Zool Bailey and obviously Bach and Beethoven.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So it's a kind of a pretty exciting weekend. And just the fact that it's beautiful how it is. Enough in and of itself.
Exactly. Sun in August, we'll take. Sun anytime.
We'll take it anytime.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Especially. Exactly. Well, thank you for braving the fabulous weather and coming over. Don't stay too late over there.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
She's not listening, I bet. All right. Thanks for all that you do. And thank you for joining Jeff and I today on Juno Afternoon. The weather is pretty much the way it was when we started the show. It's a little sunnier, though. It's high near 64 today. Tonight will be low around 52. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming east after midnight. Tomorrow mostly sunny with a high near 68. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night mostly clear with a low around 54. Saturday is sunny with a high near 75. Saturday night low around 54. And Sunday partly sunny with a high near 64. So tune in tomorrow. Andy Klein hosts the Friday edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO. He'll be talking with the artist Debbie Bloom about her first Friday show at COPA, and then also about the first Friday activities at Kindred Post. There's a new zine that will be unveiled there. And then he'll also be talking with KJ Metcalf about Sunday's Hiroshima Vigil. Well, that and more. So anytime you want to tune in to Juno Afternoon, you could just stream it at ktoo.org. Have yourself a great day.